Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday, June 2nd, 2011, and this is Rajiv Escana for immigration.com, Law Offices of Rajiv Escana PC. This call is being recorded, so if you want to keep your identities confidential, please do so. If you don't want your voice to be recorded, hang up or don't talk during the call. Just by answering a few questions here, we don't undertake representation, nor do you become our client. So this call is not intended to create an attorney-client relationship. It's basically for general information. That said, let me get started. What typically we do is I will answer all the questions that have been posted on the forums, and then I will open the call for questions from people, follow-ups on the questions that have been posted. If time permits, then we would deal with any questions that are new. Okay. So question number one is from Happy Wife. She wants to bring her sister over to USA, and she's willing to adopt the child. The problem is the sister is 16. So you've got correct advice. She cannot be adopted after the age of 16. So as far as I know, 16 is the drop-dead date. After that, we cannot adopt a child. It's just that's the law. Okay, now one of the things that you mentioned about a treaty, et cetera, what happens is there is an international convention or treaty which some countries have signed, according to which laws of adoption and migration between the countries have been settled, and that's called the Hague Convention. So if a country is a signatory to the Hague Convention, they will follow certain procedures for adoption. I'm not going to get into the details here because it doesn't look like that's a viable option here. Now, if you get your mom here and then have the mom or dad apply for your sister, that still is a very long process, 10-11 year long process. If your father gets sponsored by a sister, that's the same as you sponsoring your sister. It still takes 10 plus years for him and then another 5, 6, 7 years for her. None of these are viable options. Okay. So if I ask for my mom, how long will it take before she gets her green card? Well, let's look at it. I'm looking at the visa bulletin. So when you apply for mom, let's see what. That's an immediate relative category. Sorry, what am I thinking? She should be able to get to USA within a year. Then if she applies for your sister, that would be unmarried sons and daughters, or it would be actually spouses and children of permanent. That would be family category 2A. 2A is right now 4 years backed up. So your sister could be here if you move really fast, probably before she turns 21. So if you apply for your mother, she is here within a year, okay? And then mother applies for your sister, and that is family category F2A because she's a child under the age of 21. So F2A is currently processed at 22nd August 2007, which means backed up about 4 years. So a total of 5 years. That seems to be the best option, you know, going through applying for your mom, and then your mom applying for your sister. Make sure that your sister does not get married. This category would not be available for married people. Okay. That seems to be all your questions. Let me just track them real quickly. Do you know of any other way I could bring my sister as soon as possible? No. If I ask for my mom, if my mom comes here, she gets the job, then apply for my sister. Okay. I think I've answered all your questions, Melissa. I hope you're on the call. If you have any follow-up questions, I'll answer them for you. Next question is from Sai for GC. I'm on EB3. Son is 17 years old. He might be aged out. He's ready to take admission in college. Will he be protected by CSPA? CSPA protects those people whose 485 has already been filed before they are 21, or It basically takes out from their age only the time the I-140 was pending. So if your I-140 was pending 6 months, your son will get a benefit of another 6 months, so he could apply for 485 till the age of 21 years and 6 months. So that's all CSPA does for people in this situation. Is it better for him to transfer to F1 or stay on AOC? AOS is as good. I mean, once AOS is filed, as far as I know, CSPA protects you once the AOS is filed. I do not believe that should be a problem, but double-check that. You know, it's been a while since I looked at this. I believe that CSPA would protect you once AOS is filed. But double-check it. Have your lawyers look at it. This is an important thing. You don't want to just – I always, you know, double and triple-check my own findings. My own guess is that should be okay. So AOS would be great, and F1 may not be needed. I am on 11th year of H1. Can I do this? H1 to EAD, back to H1 if needed? Yes, you can. Change of address to another state, will it have any adverse effect on green card case? Depends upon how the green card is drafted. If the labor certification is drafted with the possibility of movement to other states, or if you intend to come back to the state from which you applied or the place where you applied after your green card is approved, that is another option. So it depends. It's a difficult question for me to answer. Hypothetically speaking, there is a very bright possibility that it should have no adverse effect on your green card if your green card is drafted with that in mind. If the green card is not drafted or planned with change to another state in mind, then you can lose your green card. Client is offering job with similar duties as in my GC labor with different title, name, and more pay. Is this a problem? So you're asking about AC-21, and you should read my blog entries on AC-21. It tells you everything that you need to know as far as I can remember. I have 4 or 5 different entries on AC-21, and they cover the entire gamut, the entire ground on which AC-21 is based. So normally speaking, a reasonable variation in salary, maybe as much as between 5 and 10% per year, could be accommodated. It is possible, and also it is possible that sometimes, let's say, if you are working in Arkansas and from Arkansas you move to San Francisco, of course there's going to be some difference in the wages because the two places have such different wages. So wage alone may not be the issue. I would strongly recommend you discuss this with your lawyers. They can give you better advice. Joni wants to know, she's a U.S. citizen, applied for mother's green card, but mother left USA during this process, and there was some arrest issue 37 years ago, which is long, long ago. But in any case, when she left USA, obviously her 485 is deemed to be abandoned. I'm assuming that you had applied for adjustment of status. Okay. Once that is abandoned, you cannot revive that. But you cannot revive that case, but you can always file a new case. Since you have an I-130 approval, what you can do is you can file something called Form I-824, and convert your case to consular processing, so that what will happen is that USCIS will send information to National Visa Center in New Hampshire, which will then send you some forms to fill out. And next thing is your mom will be called for an interview from the U.S. consulate in the country where she is living. Okay, so you can convert your case to consular processing, and that would be fairly easy to do. It takes time, 8, 9, 10 months, but it's best one easy way to do this. Okay, because see, what you've done is you've done two things: I-130, which remains intact even if she leaves USA, and the second thing you've done is 485 AOS, adjustment of status, that was abandoned when she left USA. Okay, I believe, now there is a school of thought in USCIS that might come back and say, well, once the 485 is abandoned, then everything is abandoned. I don't think that's the way it should work. Okay, next question is from TP, T-Pankaj99, who says, last conference call we talked about the best way to bring a baby back to USA. They have an AOS case going. You see, When you are on H1, bringing a child into USA is a different way. a different modality. When you are, and I'm not considering AOS as a separate status because status is really either green card or H-1. So if you're a green card holder or an H-1 holder, the only way that I know you can bring an adopted child into USA is if the child has been adopted and under your custody for 3 years. Okay, so I'm not sure what exactly you inquired from the U.S. from the U.S. consulate. You may want to call them or go through a congressman's office to get more information. Okay, we are pending applicants for if we have our child while on our visit to India. Oh, I'm sorry, you're not talking about adoption. You are talking about being born in India. I'm sorry, I misunderstood the question. It was, I think what threw me off is, I see. So the child is born in, I see what you're saying. The problem is, if you were a green card holder and you had a child born to you in USA, you could bring the child back with you if the child was under 2 years of age and it was your first trip back to USA. No problem. That we understand. The question is, what if we are not green card holders yet? We are AOS. So AOS is a limbo. It really is not a green card. Okay? So really, you either have to follow the rules of H-1 or you have to follow the rules of green card. You can't have anything in between. The only way I know how to bring this child back is a tourist visa. And you have to talk with the consulate about this. Explain to them that we are not green card holders yet. Okay? We are AOS applicants. And see if they are, if the 9 FAM 42 Note 1 and 1.1 covers that. Okay, so you can also contact them through the through your congressman's office. But I don't know an easy answer to this question. Personally, I think tourist visa is the only option. But if the consulate is willing to, issue it, that's another thing to decide. As far as I know, this was, as I said the last time, one of our clients did get a B-1 visa for the child, but it definitely is consular discretion. I am not aware of anything in law that says that's the way it ought to be. Next question, user local, can the same employer refile an EB-2? In my opinion, yes. So if you have an EB-3 application approved by an employer, and that employer also has an EB-2 level job open for you, which you can qualify for, it can be done. I don't see any issue with it. We do it all the time, but it's got to be done in good faith. You can't just make cases. These cases are filed under penalty of perjury. We have to make sure that, we are not making things up. If it's a genuine job, definitely there's a way to do it, but you need to talk with your lawyers because you don't want to file a case in a way that will jeopardize your EB-3 application. Okay. Next question, again, user local, what kind of unpaid internship volunteer work can be done on H-4? As long as it is not paid, there is no benefits, no in-kind return, no medical insurance, you can work in your own field or you can work in any field. If the organization subsequently sponsors her for an H-1, is that okay? I think it's okay as long as that's not an expected deal. Because if you make that deal, it could be said that there is some expected benefit out of this. Okay? Of course, I may be being a little silly because benefits as understood means benefits as in, medical insurance, things like that. But I would rather be on the side of safety than being sorry. Okay? So be safe. Don't expect that an H-1 will be done. If later on they change their mind and they want to do an H-1, that's fine, but that should not be a precondition to volunteering. Next question, GK says, and this is GK Okonda, I traveled on expired AP by mistake, and I advised you to come back on H-1B and file for the 485 again. I have since renewed my EAD and AP. Look, the moment they find out that you had traveled outside, they will take away everything, including the advanced parole and the EAD. There is no question about that. Okay? As far as your lawyer's opinion is concerned, I am surprised that they would even have any doubts about this. It's quite obvious to me that they will, as soon as they find out, they will take away your 485, EAD, everything. Okay? In my view, a 485 has to be filed, and it has to be filed again. There is no question about that. I don't think you should wait. You should file a 485 again. Is there any humanitarian consideration to return to India for H-1B stamping? You can try H-1B stamping in Canada. That's the only thing I can think of. Is she okay to accept maternity leave from her employer, like salary, hospital, etc., outside the United States before she gets back to valid work status? I think so. I don't see any problem with that. Okay. Next question is Stanley, who is Jill. Jill applied for green card in 2004 in EB3. I-140 was approved. Applied in EB2, labor approved. I-140 was denied, saying that you had a bachelor's in physics and master's in computer science. I must tell you, I disagree with that finding that these are unrelated degrees. They are related degrees. They're both quantitative sciences, and I think you should have appealed this case. Anyhow, I-140, since the application is still pending in TSC. Okay. Now, he can't find out what is happening. What you should do, Stanley, is easiest thing is just contact your congressman's office. Have your employer do that, or have your employer contact the ombudsman's office. They should be able to track down your papers, okay? Next question, Andrew GC. This is Drew. He says, got my GC in June of 2010. Last week I was laid off by the company that sponsored my green card. Keep evidence that the company laid you off, not you, that you didn't quit, okay? You've worked with this company for 1 year. There is nothing you need to do. After getting your green card in June 2010, you got laid off in May 2011. There is no problem. You're all set. You don't even need to keep evidence of them firing you. Nothing you need to do. So you don't have to file any more paperwork like AC-21, etc. You do not need to find a job immediately. You can take as much time off as you want. You can sit at home all day if you want for as long as you like. And you can be totally changing your jobs now. You can go into investment banking if you like. You can do whatever you want. And the company cannot revoke an I-140 now. It does not do anything. You've got your green card. Okay? So you're all set. Do whatever you want. You are completely free now. MB904 wants to know, change in employer and job profile while AOS was pending. Software engineer. Okay. Then you did your MBA in 2007. Layoff in April 2008 from GC sponsoring employer. Worked on EAD with technology contracting firm for 6 months as a software engineer. Okay. Did not apply for AC-21, but now I'm working as a business development manager. That can be an issue. That can be an issue. Because I personally feel that you should immediately file for a second green card as a business development manager, because it could very well be that your AC-21 jobs just don't match, so AC-21 can be declined. Therefore, it makes sense to start a second green card as quickly as possible. If you get an RFE for employment verification, they can decline your AC-21 and take away your green card application. And I don't like the idea of even accepting a green card if it is approved with a totally different job. So I think you should start a second green card. Second question, or unless you want to go back to the software engineer job, you know, in that case, go to software engineer job and file AC-21. These days, I'm not recommending anybody not to file. Everybody should file AC-21. Next question, Zeal 2005, visitor visa denied, help needed. I looked at your brother's case. I don't think there is much you can do. See, the denial is 214B denial, which basically means they suspect that he's a potential candidate for green card. That he's a potential candidate for illegal immigration. In other words, he might have immigrant intent. So therefore, there is no way. I don't care what kind of paperwork you bring. It's almost impossible for us to predict what is going to happen. Ultimately, tourist visas or business visas are completely the domain of discussion of the consular officer. Okay, so your question is what precaution can he take or what specific documents? I would take evidence that, you know, he's got all this business, etc., and, you know, I'm sure he took it the last time. There is no limit on how many times can you apply under the law, but local consulates have their own limits, artificial limits. So you can check with the consulate what their limits are. Usually, if I remember correctly, in India, the consulates were doing this. First time you apply for a tourist visa, then next time you have to apply through mail only. You can't come in personally unless they call you. Third time also, something like that, only by mail. And then if you have to wait 1 year before you apply again, something like that. I don't recall the details. But as far as law is concerned, there's no limit to how many times you can apply. Consulates may have their own limits. Next question, new to H-1B, new H-1B with wage level between level 1 and level 2. Is it okay for a person with bachelor's degree in computer science, CSE, I guess, computer science engineering, with no experience to apply for H-1B as a DBA with level 1 wage? Yes, it is okay. Only thing is, make sure that your job does require a degree. See, because DBAs, if you're managing one server with a Microsoft SQL extension, I'm not sure that requires a bachelor's degree. But at the same, if you are a DBA over a server farm or over more higher-end databases, SQL, MySQL or Oracle, something of that nature, working in heterogeneous environments, you could very well make a claim that, and rightfully so, that a bachelor's degree is required for this job. So it is okay to have an entry-level job in those circumstances as long as the job does require a degree. Is there anything like to apply for H-1B? We must have more than level 2 wage. There is no such requirement. You can have H-1s for level 1 wages. What are the chances for H-1B approval for DBA position for a person who doesn't have any experience? H-1 does not require experience. It only requires a degree. So make sure your job requires a degree. That's all. That's all that is needed. All right. I am done with my question, my written questions that people had posted. If anybody here has a question, since we don't have a lot of people on the phone, I'll take any questions. Press star 5 on your phone, star 5, and I will unmute you to talk to me. Press star 5 on your phones. I have one question, two questions, star 5. Okay. I'll deal with the two questions, and then we will call it an end to it. Let me start with the person who logged in first. Area code 714. Go ahead, please. You're on the phone. Make sure you don't divulge any personal information. This call is being recorded. Area code 714. Go ahead.
Hi, this is MB904. I just wanted more information on my second question, that what would be wrong if I accepted the green card in the new position, and is that going to be a problem with the citizenship?
Let me remember. Yours is the case where you went from software engineer to business development manager.
Correct.
Okay. Here's what is the problem. When you go and apply for citizenship 5 years down the line,
mm-hmm.
you have to mention all the jobs you've held in the last 5 years.
Right.
It clearly shows up that you took a green card as a business development manager
right.
while you were working as a business development manager. Immediately, it's a red flag, and they will not only refuse you citizenship, they could actually come after your green card.
Okay. And what if I do it after 10 years?
I don't know the answer to that question. It's certainly, first of all, why do you want to go this route? Why don't you just file a second green card at the same time? You can take the same priority date, in all probability. At the same time, you'll have a safe green card. Why not?
Okay, so the priority date will remain the same?
Mm-hmm. The priority date goes away only if the I-140 is taken away.
I see. Okay. So then I just need to work with my current employer to do that?
Absolutely. That's the right thing to do.
Okay. Given that it's current right now, so and I'm expecting that it will remain current for the next month or two, if we just file right now, do you think we'll be able to get in during this window?
I don't think so. I think you may want to consider going back and taking a technical position with the company and filing an AT-21.
Yeah, that'll be more.
Those are the two choices you've got.
Right. So, no, I guess what I was saying is that if with the biz dev manager, if I file for a second one, then do you think I'll have it in the next month, 2 months, or do I have to wait another 1 or 2 years before?
I can't predict that. See, labor certification, Department of Labor has gone back to auditing a lot more than they were last year.
Mm-hmm.
If you had asked me last year, I would have said, there's a very high likelihood you'll be done within 6 months.
Right.
Today, it could easily be 2.5 years.
Right. Even with this priority date.
No, it's not the priority. It's not the pending green card I'm worried about. It's the second green card I'm worried about.
Yeah, but the second one, wouldn't it have the same priority date?
Labor sort itself can take 2.5 years, my friend. Priority date only becomes an issue at the I-140 stage.
Right. Right, that's true.
The labor cert itself could get you stuck for 2.5 years.
Hmm. Okay.
But you should still do it. At least you have a good faith attempt at correcting your situation.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. Last call of the day, area code 732. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rod.
Hello?
Yes, this person who traveled on expired advance parole earlier.
Sure, I know your case.
Yes, thank you, sir. And then as I guess you answered saying that I can file for the second 485 without having to wait for the decision of the first 485,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, having said that, I file the second 485, and then what would be the next step? So the first 485, because of the whatever reason it gets returned.
Somewhere along the line. First of all, what you want to do is make sure you use the same A number to file the second case as you had in the first case. Somewhere along the line, USCIS will wake up and say, wait a minute, why do you have two 485s? You say, I'm withdrawing the old one because I traveled while that was pending. Or you can even make it simpler. Just file the second one, withdraw the first one.
I see. Okay.
Get your EAD, get your advance parole through the second one, then withdraw the first one.
I see. So the next steps would be file for the second 485, get an EAD and advance parole to the second 485, and then withdraw the first one.
Absolutely.
Yes. And the second question there is, in the interim time, now that I am back on a H-1B stamping and then my spouse is working on her EAD, what if in a situation that she has to travel outside the country, so she can come back on her advance parole?
Only? Now, does she have a separate green card going?
No.
Okay. You see, that old AP is no good because it was issued based upon a mistaken 485. That 485 is gone.
Okay.
So don't travel on that.
I see. Okay. So.
Okay. Actually, I would want you to... Did you re-enter USA using H-1B or using the old advance parole?
I entered using H-1B.
Good. Because if you had entered using advance parole, I'm not sure you would have been eligible to file a 485.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
So that's good. So file for a new 485, and as soon as I get a receipt, I file for an EAD and advance parole.
No, you file everything together.
Oh, I file everything together. Okay.
Advance parole, EAD, 485, everything together.
And then after she receives, I can travel and come back on my H-1B, and then she can travel and come back on her advance parole.
Right. And I'm assuming that when you entered USA, she entered with you on H-4.
No. She was not. She didn't go out of the country.
She was in USA. Now, this raises a very interesting legal issue. And the issue is this. Hmm. When you left USA, your 485 was deemed abandoned. Does that not automatically, by operation of law, take away her 485 as well? And since she has been in USA since the time her 485, so is she eligible to file a second 485? Just to be on the safe side, I would want her to travel outside USA and come back on H-4 visa and then file 485 for her. But double-check this with your lawyers because there are some legal issues here that need to be addressed.
Okay. So
her case is a little different than yours. Yours is straightforward. You file 485.
Okay. So right now, just to clarify, she's working on her EAD full-time.
Right.
And you're saying file for H-1 through that employer. Go and come back outside to H-1, to her employer, and then file a 485.
You see, the problem is either she quits job and enters on H-4,
mm-hmm.
or she enters on H-1. Because I have my doubts whether we can file, I have to do some very careful legal analysis to figure out whether we can have her file a 485 when that 485 was already invalid. So in other words, has she been out of status so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? She's not unlawfully present, but she's definitely out of status.
I see. I see.
Okay.
So what is that you suggest me, sir, to do as an...
That's something you have to figure out with your lawyers, what is the best way to handle her case. Yours, I can tell, it's an easy one.
Okay. Okay. Understood. All right, Raju. Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, guys. Before I hang up, anybody else has any questions? Press star 5 on your phone. I don't see any questions anymore. Okay, area code 917 has a question. Then area code 2801 has a question. Okay. Oh, 917 went off the air again, so I'm not sure if you have a question. Area code 801, go ahead, please. Area code 801, you have a question? Okay, I'm going to – I don't know what's happening. People keep coming in and out. I'll just unmute everybody. Hang on one second. Okay, guys, I have unmuted everybody. If you have a question, speak up.
Hello. Hey, Raju.
Yeah, gentlemen, I hear a gentleman and a lady. Let's have the lady go first.
Okay.
Hi, Raju ji. Mamla bol rahi.
Ji.
This one, new to H1B.
Mm-hmm.
So, main H1 apply karne ke liye soch rahi hu, level 1 pe. Can I apply for level 1?
Oh, absolutely. I just left you. You are the DBA, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, you probably didn't hear that, but you can definitely apply for level 1 positions as long as the job requires a bachelor's degree. You don't require an experience. Okay. You don't require any experience. Basically, okay. If you have a degree in computer science or equivalent, you can definitely apply for the job. I don't see any problem with the level 1 salary.
Okay. The thing is, F1 pe thi and thode university ko DHS wale some problem was going on, so main F1 pe H4 ko gayi thi and I spoke with you and you told to go to India and stamp H4, and I got my H4 stamping, and so is that fine?
Yeah, yeah. If you enter USA on H4 stamping, hopefully that should take care of all your past problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Job description.
What else? Okay.
Hello, sir. So I'm her husband. So can I ask you something? Like,
this is DBA. If you go with your DBA.
Yeah. If you go with your law firm, will you help with the description of the job so that it will be more?
I will not write a job description for anybody. That is illegal for a lawyer to do. But I will I will certainly help you. Make sure that whatever you are writing is true to the facts.
Yeah.
Okay? So, no, we don't write job descriptions. If you just want a job description, go to flcdatacenter.com. Online, it tells you what the job description should be. What does a DBA do? A DBA basically is the daddy or a mommy of the
database.
What do they do?
Yeah.
The database is already designed. They go in there. Some of them might help with the database design, et cetera, but most of them just go in there. They make sure that the databases are functioning properly. They'll do tuning. They'll take care of the security, disaster recovery, day-to-day administration, monitoring. This is typically what a database administrator does. Okay?
Yeah, so but it's
really
it sounded like an entry
time.
Level.
Yeah, entry level is okay, and sometimes they can work under supervision. I mean, if it's a junior-level database administrator, you're not going to let them manage the databases of Amazon.com. You want somebody to look over what they're doing.
Yeah.
Lawyers, you know, we have lawyers who have a license to practice, but they are just first year into practice. I'm not going to let them handle my client's cases without supervising them. That doesn't mean they're not professionals. It just means they're entry-level professionals.
Yeah, so the job description is normally what they're describing what they should do. You can help us with what can be the entry level, what we should put, like beginning level or something like
look,
that.
Look, I want to make one thing very clear. No lawyer should be writing job descriptions, but every lawyer should make sure that the job descriptions comply with facts and the law.
Yeah.
You know, if we see a job description, I will look at a job description and say, you know what, this is not a professional level job, sorry. We can't do an HR.
Yeah.
And if the employer says, well, you know, this is what have we not put in? And I would say, well, what in your job makes it a kind of a job that requires a bachelor's degree? And then when they start talking, for example, they'll say security. I'll say, all right, what kind of security are we talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And we actually, we assess applications. We don't create applications.
Okay.
So that we will do. No question
okay.
about that.
Okay.
We'll make sure what you're saying is correct to the facts and correct to the law. But we will not
okay.
help you create a job description so you can get an H-1. That's illegal.
Yeah. So, okay, sir. I got the point. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Now, there's one more person with a question, sir. Go ahead. Hello?
Yeah, Rajiv. This is Jail 2005, and the question was about the tourist visa for my elder brother.
Yes.
I have two more questions related to that.
Sure, go ahead.
One is like last time when he went for the visa, he took all his documentation related to business, but they don't even look at it. So I don't know how it will help taking the same documentation again this time. That was one question.
Well, you
and
see,
second,
that's one problem we have faced time and time again. Look, you can try this.
Yes.
I'm not sure it will work. You can try submitting this documentation through your congressman's office and say, look, this guy's documentation was taken and you didn't even review it. Please take a look at it. This guy deserves a visa. Then let them assess it. It doesn't make it necessarily an approvable case, but maybe there's some chance it might work. Okay, you want to hire a lawyer. A lawyer can make a difference only to the extent that they can write to the consulate and say this case needs to be reassessed. You've made a mistake. You have not looked at the evidence. This is the evidence. That doesn't mean you're going to win, but at least it makes it worthwhile.
Oh, I see. Okay. And second question was, if it doesn't work, if I give my supporting documents for his visa, will it work? Do you think it will work?
Well, I don't think that makes a difference. The problem is with him, not with you. See, the problem is that he is assumed to have immigrant intention. That's the problem.
Right.
Okay, so what he has to overcome is that presumption that he's going to become an immigrant in USA.
Oh, okay, no. Why I was asking this is because the supporting letters that we sent from here, it states that we will be responsible to make sure that they go back after their legal...
There is nothing that doesn't mean anything. You know, he's an adult, you're an adult, you can't be responsible for him no matter what you say.
Okay.
And the government can't hold you to it.
Yeah.
It's like going in a temple and promising God that I will be good. Who's going to watch over you? You know?
Yeah.
The point is, it's a bad example, but the point is that when a legally unenforceable promise is made, it has no value. So if I promise the consulate, I'll make sure my brother goes back, and the consulate can do nothing to enforce that, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Let us see what happens this time. We will give a try once again.
Absolutely. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. By the way, your brother is a, you said he's a businessman, right?
Yeah.
He's in construction. Is he a huge guy, a small business? What exactly, what is the level of the business?
It's like he's a consultant. He's an architect, and he has like, you know, like a medium level business, I can say. Or
how many employees does he have?
Sorry?
How many employees does he have?
He has around 6 to 7 employees, I believe. Yeah.
Well, if nothing else works, tell him to look into L1 visa if he wants to open a company in USA.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah, so, okay. But he has to register the company here then in that case, right?
That's a long story. We can talk about that. But, you know, that may be a potential option, although for smaller companies, I don't think it's very attractive. It can work, but it's not very attractive.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay, no problem. Yeah, I will keep it in mind.
Absolutely. Good luck to you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Guys, somebody else had a question? Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Ravi, go ahead.
Yeah, my case is like I have two applications going on with USCIS. I applied in this April for H-1B visa,
mm-hmm.
and they signed me an RFE, and the last date to respond to RFE was July 3rd. And my reinstatement is going on. Actually, I submitted all the documentation what they requested in the RFE. So my question is like, does it like they can put my reinstatement application on hold until they approved my H-1B application or denied H-1B or they...
You have a reinstatement application, reinstatement to student status, right?
Yes, I filed that reinstatement in the month of March, and after that I got the employer in April, and filed the H-1B
okay.
in April.
Okay, they don't put on hold anything. They decide whatever comes up first.
Okay, doesn't matter like if I filed the both application at the same center, right?
Yeah, they won't put anything on hold.
Okay, all right. That was the only question.
Yeah, are you a part of the Tri-Valley University situation?
Yes, sir. Actually, I was.
Do me one favor. I forgot to do it. Are you also on their Google groups?
Yes.
Do me a favor. Just tell them that I'm not doing Tri-Valley University calls separately anymore because most of you guys have had some resolution. So what you do is just join me in the general community conference calls that we do every other Thursday.
Okay.
So the next call will be June 9, June 16th. Every 2 weeks we'll do a call. And, of course, people have my email address if they have any specific questions. They are emailing me already.
Okay, sir. Okay.
Just tell them to join us in the community conference calls, okay?
Hi, Rajiv. This is Sai for DC.
Yes, Sai for DC. How are you? You are an old customer of mine. What's going on?
I'm fine. My question regarding the second one, if I do like H1, EAD.
Can I do H1 to EAD to H1? Yes, of course.
Then the H1 will come with I-94?
Without I-94. You have to go outside, get a visa.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what
okay.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right, thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. Guys, all done?
Hello, Rajiv. This is Drew.
Hi, Drew. Go ahead.
Just a quick question, though. Should I get a letter from the company that laid me off just so that I can have that naturalization, or it doesn't really matter?
Oh, no, no. 1 year, you've given them your life, man. Get away from them.
Also, if I take some time off and all that, does this anything affect naturalization? Or
no problem at all. Sit at home, watch TV, have some beers, watch cricket, watch baseball, whatever you like. No problem.
Relax, travel a little bit, see the world.
Absolutely. Do some yoga, improve your body, improve your mind.
All right, awesome. Thank you, sir.
All right, sir. Good luck. Because, see, 1 year is a lot of time after getting your green card. You're free. You're free like everybody else. You have every right that a U.S. citizen has, except the right to vote and the right to be away from USA indefinitely.
Okay. So if at the POE, if they ask me, do you have a job or not, what should I say, just in case?
You say, no, sir, I'm a bum.
Unhappy about it.
And delightful. Absolutely. Just say, I'm a joyous bum and I'm very happy. They can't stop you from coming in. That's your issue.
Okay, got it.
As long as you're not taking from the U.S. government, as long as you're not, become a public charge, you're not getting money from the government, nobody can bother you.
Okay, excellent.
All right, awesome. Good luck.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, by the way, getting unemployment insurance is not U.S. funds. That's a private insurance that your company pays into. So if they fired you, you're entitled to your unemployment insurance, and you can get it, and there's no harm to your green card.
Oh, that's I didn't know that. I thought that only if you do the Google searching that I had found was if you apply for unemployment, it might affect your naturalization, which is why I was not going to apply, but you put some new light on
it. How does that affect you? And I would like to know who said that, because maybe I have something to learn here. The way I look at it, unemployment insurance, it's just like having a car accident. God forbid that you have a car accident. And you get insurance to pay for it. But you have been paying from your own pocket. That's private insurance, nothing to do with the government. It's the same with unemployment insurance. Unemployment insurance is a fund into which your employer pays. Pay premiums for all our employees in our firm, and their premiums go to the state government. And if the employee gets laid off without cause, they are entitled to get some money for a few weeks. This is all a private insurance.
Gotcha. I may now be a bum for a little bit longer now.
Yes, sir. Go for it.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. All right, folks. But Drew, if you find out something that makes sense, email it to me. I'm always willing to learn. Maybe there is something here I haven't looked at. Immigration law is vast. Nobody should be so cocky as to think that they know all the answers. So
I'll do some more research.
I just don't see how. I personally don't see how. The closest example I gave you is to a vehicle accident. You have paid into the insurance. Why should you not take money out of it?
Okay, cool. Yeah, my major concern was the letter, though, because the bridge is about to get burnt, and I want to know if whatever I need from them
is... No problem. You don't need anything. You're good. And if there is any problem, that's what we are here for. I don't see... If you were my own little brother, I would say just take 6 months off. No big deal.
All right, awesome. Thank you, sir.
All right. Good luck. Folks, anybody else has any question? Go ahead. Oh, good. We are done. I will see you in a couple of weeks. Be good, guys. Bye-bye.